We'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Tes. So we're going to, being that today is Yom HaZikaron, that today is a day in which we remember the incredible Mesiras Nefesh of the over 22,000 soldiers who have given their lives in Israel's wars, protecting Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, the residents of Eretz Yisrael, as well as the victims of terror. So we go ahead and we dedicate our learning today Le'ilui Nishmasam, Began Eden, Tehimenu Chasam, and we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives their families an incredible sense of Nechama for the incredible carbon, the incredible sacrifice that they've given for all of Am Yisrael. And in the schus of their sacrifice, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring the Geula Hasidah B'mheira on me.
Amen.
Okay, so let's begin. Is there another sponsor? No. Old sheet. So let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Tes. We're picking up on Ayin Ches on the days, the last two lines. Actually, a very interesting case. Hahi isisa debayid de tavrechinu l'nechasa megabra. So we'll say there was a woman, and she wanted to go ahead and essentially shield her assets from her husband. Now, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi says debayid de tavrechinu l'nechasa amanahai. So she was a widow. Ubasa lehinase, she wanted to get remarried. Vahaisa mekademes venosenes libita kede la riach suchus baila mehem. Shaliiska bahem, baldiala idem shein matana zumatana, ela la ha riach, veloshatiska bahem abas, intis amen ohi otiskar. So let's listen to this. So what did she do? So this woman getting remarried, she did not want her husband, her new husband, second husband, to have any rights in her assets. So what did she do? So she went ahead, kasvinu labarta, kasvinu labarta. She went ahead and she wrote all of her assets to her daughter. She gifted all of her assets to her daughter. All right, now, by the way, you should know, people do this today, right? People do this today to avoid, is it Medicare or Medicaid? I don't know, however it is. That in part of estate planning, people shift assets. I think it's legal.
No, I'm my
father.
Not
okay, don't. It is legal, right? I think it's legal. You can shift assets over. I mean, there's a look back period. That is, yeah. Moshe, we're gonna edit this. I want to. I'm not dispensing legal advice. I want to be clear. Right. We have a place in the Caymans that you could shift your assets. So, the idea over here is she wants to go ahead and write all of her assets to her daughter in order that her husband not have any rights. But I will say it's clear, however, again, and Rashi points this out, it was clear that Lamaisa, her intent was that in the event of death or divorce, she would get the, in the event that husband number two would die or divorce her, that she would want these assets back from her daughter. Okay, so what happened? Insabe, so the mother got married. Vigarsha, and then she got divorced. Top of Ayin Tes. So we'll say what happened. Asa lekamei drav nachmas. So we'll say, so the parentheses in the story is, after the mother gets divorced, she comes to her daughter, says to the daughter, give me back my stuff. Daughter says, I love you, mom, but no, you gifted it to me. Right? You gifted it to me. So what happens? They come before Rav Nachman. Rashi says, Asa lekamei drav nachmas. Litvoa es bito. So what happened? So they come to the Far of Nachman. Mother says, listen, I only gave her this in order to go ahead and shield the assets from my husband. Daughter says, I don't know what you're talking about. I have a gift document that says you've gifted all your property to me. So daughter does not want to return it based on the power of the shtar. What happened? So Kari Rav Nachman Lishtara. Rav Nachman tore up the shtar. Rabbi said, now Rav Nachman tearing up the shtar is Rav Nachman essentially saying that shtar is meaningless. That shtar is absolutely meaningless. Why is it meaningless? Because it was clear that it was really never your mother's intent to go out and give you the assets. It was your mother's intent to what? To simply shield those assets from her husband. Therefore, the gift is not really an effective gift. Therefore, he tore up the shtar and the property goes back to the mother. Apparently Rav Anan was present. Either he was present or he heard about this. And what happened? Rav Anan went before Mar Okva. Amar le chazi mar nachmin chaklo hecha mekarish tari v'inshi. And Rav Anan is very upset. He says to Mar Okva, look at Nachman. Now we'll say Nachman chaklo means Nachman the peasant. Look at Nachman the peasant. Look what he's doing. Now we'll say, now why is he calling him a peasant? So Rashi says, eino baki bedinin. Clearly does not know halacha. How can you just go ahead and tear up shtaros that people bring to Beis Din? Amarle, so Mar Ukva said, Emali izi gufa du'uv dehechi hava. Tell me exactly what happened. So to which Rav Anan responds, Amrale hachi v'hachi hava. So Rav Hanan responds, so-and-so, he tells him the case. Amrale, so Rav Hanan says, oh, shtar mavreches kamritz. So he said, you're talking this time, shtar, you know what you call this? We call this shtar mavreches. And both say, now, what does a shtar mavreches mean? Shtar mavreches literally means, like from Lashon of Barach, a shtar that is there just to chase assets away from someone. So it's not a bless you, it's not a real shtar, it's not the real transaction, she's just simply trying to show the property. And Hachi Amar Rabbi Chaniloi ben Idi bar Idi Amar Shmuel, Mora Horaani. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Chaniloi bar Idi said the name of Shmuel. Shmuel said this, I'm a Mora Hora, I'm a posek. And I'm going to tell you, Im Yavo Shtar Mavreches Liadi Akraenu. If the shtar havracha would come my way, I would tear it up. Why would I tear it up, Rabbi? Because Shmuel is saying it's not a real shtar. Because Rabbi say, if your das is not to really convey ownership to someone, but your das is just simply to quote unquote convey ownership, wink wink, in order that someone else doesn't have rights in it, that's not really a proper conveyance. Therefore, Shmuel said he would have gone ahead and torn it up as well. So therefore, again, Rabbi say, so even though Rav Anan comes to complain before Mar Okva, Mar Okva actually goes in and backs up Rav Nachman's approach. Rashi says, look at Rashi just a moment. Im yavo shtar mavreches liyadi, shiirtza mekabel matana, shiirtza mekabel matana lahachzik b'nechasim apiv, sholach ziyom lenosin, that if somebody were to show up in Beis Din and claim that they have the rights to keep the property, based on this shtar, which we know is the shtar havracha, Akra and Shmuel said, I would go ahead and tear it up. Now, I want to be clear on something. You know, how do you know that a shtar is the shtar havracha? Because at the end of the day, remember, the shtar just says that you know, A is conveying ownership to B. That's why, if you remember again, Rashi and Ahmed Beis pointed out that when the mother was conveying ownership of this property to the daughter, it was they wrote a shtar, but she said in front of the witnesses that the only purpose I'm doing this is to shield these assets from my husband. So we'll say, obviously, because again, without a declaration like that, if a person shows up in Beis Din with a shtar that says that, A conveyed property interest to me, and now B is claiming, or A is claiming, oh no, it was a shtar of racha, person doesn't have a right to claim that, because anybody could claim that. Lemaisa, again, this only reason this case works is because the Edim heard that this was the intent of the mother. Amri Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav said to Rav Nachman, "Time b'mai, why is it that you say that a shtar havracha is not a good shtar? Delo shavik inchi nafshe v'yayv lachmini." Because I will say, people do not give away all of their assets to another person. And I will say, that's what a shtar havracha is. A shtar havracha is a person is essentially giving away all of their property to someone else. So the reason why shtar havracha doesn't work is because we know people psychologically people don't do that, or I should say financially people don't do that. So lemaisa, if you see someone doing that, lemaisa, it's not a legitimate conveyance. However, the Gemara says, "Hani midi lachrini." I see. We would have thought that applies to an individual, to someone else. Avala barta yahiva. See, what I say, I would have thought that perhaps the one exception to this rule would be with who? With a child. That maybe when it comes to a child, the parent would convey all of their property to the child. Afilu hachi, to which the Gemara says, afilu hachi, bimkom barta nafsha adifala. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Even when it comes to one's child, a parent still has to sustain themselves, and a parent is not going to gift away all of their property. Meseis, the Gemara raises the kasha, harotesh atavriach nechaseha mibayla, keitzat hi osa. Rabbi says, if a woman wants to shield her assets from her husband, so what should she do? What should she do? So this is actually very interesting. So Chazal seemed to be giving advice to a woman who wants to shield her assets from her husband. So what should she do? So Ketzir Yosa, Koseves Shtar Pasim La'achirim. She goes ahead and she writes what we call a Shtar Pasim. Rashi says, Shtar Pasim, Shtar Piyusim. Literally a Shtar of appeasement. Shemifaisaso L'kabel Matanazu. Lafkia Zuchos Baila Kodim Nisun. Velo Sheyiska B'kabel Zebahem. That essentially she finds someone who's agreeable, and she says to this person, listen, here's my situation. I need you to technically take ownership over these assets in order to shield them from my husband. But lemaisa, I don't want you to really take ownership over them. Meaning I want you to take ownership vis-a-vis precluding my husband from having rights. But should I ever want this property back, I want you to understand that I have the right to call back the gift. So Divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. So I will say, so the Rav Shimon Gamliel seems to say that such a situation works. The Chachamim say, Ratza Mitzachikba. The Chachamim say, if Lemaisa, the Mekabel, the one who receives it, wants to play games with her, he could. In other words, what could he say? What's the games? He could say, thank you very much, right? You rode me over all of your property. And when she shows up and says, I'd like it back, he could say to her, no. He could say to her, no. I'm sorry?
Why would he be different than the
daughter? Oh, so we're going to see.
Why doesn't she write something to the daughter that says, right before my death, and I give you everything? Or right before the divorce, I give you everything? We've seen that before, where if somebody conveys something...
Right, so we're next line. You Bar Shekivanta. That's exactly what the Gemara is going to say. The Chum Mazachik Ba'ad Shetichtov Lo Mehayom Ulech Sheretza. So excellent, Bar Shekivanta. So the Gemara is going to, so the Chachamim say, no, listen, if you write a shtar to someone, the problem is that person technically has the ability to go ahead and keep the assets. The only way you could protect yourself is essentially, like Howard was saying, if you create a retroactivity clause. And what's the retroactivity clause? That you can write in the shtar, Mehayom Ulech Sheretza. I'm giving you the property from this moment on, from the moment that I desire to convey the property to you. In other words, they're both like, remember, why would a woman want to shield the assets from her husband? What she's concerned about is, because remember again, it's Nichsei Malog, that's hers anyway. What is she concerned about? She's concerned, you know, sometimes, you know, if a man is happy in his marriage, say he's going to do it, and he's responsible, so he's going to do what he can to preserve his wife's property. But if he's reckless and irresponsible, or maybe sees the writing on the wall that the marriage is not going to last, he'll burn through that property very quickly. So, which of course, I'm sorry?
Also, if she were to die first, wouldn't he
finish? If she, yeah, correct, assuming there's no ksubas, but indifferent, correct. But also remember, these cases, there are many different variables, depending on how it's set up. So the mice again, where was I? So she was concerned that something's that the husband's going to go ahead and burn through her property. So we'll say so like this. So the Chacham suggests the following, that Lamaisa, if she goes ahead and writes this clause, that like this, if I see that my husband is mistreating my property, so to speak, then Lamaisa what? From the moment that I want to convey ownership to you, it will can be conveyed ownership to you retroactively from this moment, which meant that the husband never had rights over the property. But Lamaisa, and again, in that case, it'll be a real gift. But Lamaisa, should I never need to transfer ownership to you because the husband is not doing anything wrong with the property, then I won't. So therefore, again, this retroactivity clause gives her the ability to convey ownership interest retroactively to this moment should she need to shield the property from the husband. But should that need never arise, she never has to activate the clause. Rashi says over here, Adje tichtov, b'shtar zeh, she writes in the shtar itself, because if he wants to come and do something to the property, she could say, now I want to convey ownership. And lemaisa, again, that ownership interest is conveyed. So Gemara says, Taina de kas v'lehachi. The reason why the shtar works is because she wrote this clause. Ha lo kas v'lehachi. But had she not written the clause, so kanan hi lokeach. What do you see from here? You see that the lokeach, the purchaser, or the recipient, would be the owner of the property. So most of this contradicts what we said before. Because before we said the shtar havracha is meaningless. Now you're seeing that what? The shtar havracha does in fact convey ownership to the recipient. On Rabbi Zera, lokeach, it's not a contradiction. Habakula habamiktsasa. It depends. When do we say that a shtar havracha is meaningless? That's when she's conveying, or when I say she, it doesn't have to be she, it's whoever's doing it. That's when the person is conveying all of the property. People don't leave themselves penniless. Therefore, if a person is conveying all the property, that's the shtar havracha. Such a shtar like that is not meaningful. On the other hand, if a person is only conveying part of their property, then ein hachinami, such a property, such a shtar, such a conveyance, will be meaningful and effective. V'ilo kanani lokeach. So we'll say, see, here's the problem. Let's work backwards. So let's go back to the first case that we started with. So a woman conveys property to her daughter, clear shtar havracha. She doesn't really have in mind to convey ownership. Rather, she's just going ahead and shielding the assets from her husband. And now Rav Nachman tore up the shtar. Why? Because lemaisa, again, the daughter didn't acquire it. Well, here's the issue. V'ilo kanani lokeach. If indeed the daughter did not acquire the property, then what? Then nikninhu baal. Then the husband should acquire it. You know, both say, remember, if a shtar avracha is not an effective shtar, that means the woman didn't properly convey ownership interest of the property to her daughter, in which case her husband really did have rights in it. Amr Abaye, listen to this. Asom ki nechasim she'en yiduin lebaal, vali b'drav shimin. Arabas, going back to yesterday's sugya, we make this property like property that is unknown by the husband. And we saw this in yesterday's Mishnah. And what's the status of property unknown by the husband? Property unknown by the husband does not have rights. Therefore, although technically speaking, the conveyance to the daughter was ineffective, but what the conveyance did do is essentially make this like property that the husband didn't know about. Because as far as the husband was concerned, he thought the conveyance was effective. Therefore, he assumed he had no rights. It's like nechasim, the property that's not known by the husband. Therefore, he never has rights in them at all. Says the Mishnah, naflu laksafer. So we'll say, just so you should know, bottom line, we'll actually get this sugya of shtar havracha is a sugya ultimately, again, that we'll see in Bava Kamma, Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia, which is fascinating. This idea of essentially, so conveyances that are not really meant to be genuine conveyances, but are only meant to shield the property from someone else. So we'll discuss, again, the effectiveness. There are times when, so according to our Gemara over here, remember, if you're conveying all of your property, such a conveyance like that is not effective because people don't leave themselves penniless. But apparently, even a conveyance like this, if done with part of your property, could in fact be effective. Says the Mishnah, naflu ksafen. Well, so now we get into an interesting sugya. So let's say she inherits money. Wife, this is a married woman, inherits money. So what do they do with it? Yilakach ben karka. They use the money to purchase land. Huach alperos. And he goes ahead and he eats. So she retains the title of their property and he eats the peros of their property. Peros hatlusha. We'll say, because again, obviously, at least in Chazal's financial model, so land is always the best investment. So to go ahead, take the money, invest it in land, and also then they both benefit. She has an asset, and now he gets the peros. Next, who of Ochbas? Peros, right? Peros at Lushin Minakarko. If she inherits detached produce, so we'll say again, detached produce also kind of have the status of money as well. And therefore, what do we do with it? You sell off the produce, use the money to purchase land. She retains title, he gets to eat the peros. Peros amichu barn bekarka. But also listen to this. Let's say she inherits land with she inherits attached produce. I'm Rabbi Meir, Shaman Osa Kamahiyafa Beperos. We evaluate the land, how much the land is worth with the produce, the Kamahiyafa below Peros, and how much is the land worth without the Peros. Umosa Yilakach Ben Kaka. We use that difference to go ahead and purchase real estate, Vuachal Peros. And once again, he eats the fruits of that land. The Chum say, Hamichu Barn the Karka Shalo. Any attached produce is his. Vatlusha Minakarka Shalo. And anything detached is hers. The ilakach b'en karko, she sells off that produce, uses the proceeds to buy land. V'ochal peros, and he goes ahead and he eats the peros. Reb Shimon says, makom shiyafa koach bechnisasa, horakocha b'yitziasa. Makom sharakocha bechnisasa, yafa koach b'yitziasa. So also Reb Shimon says that literally, and we'll define what this is, whenever his claim is stronger during marriage, his claim is weaker in the event of dissolution of the marriage, divorce. And where her koach is weaker in marriage, is stronger ultimately in divorce. What does this mean? Ketzad? Peros amichubar in the karka. I will say, if let's say there is attached produce, bichnisasa shelo, and when the marriage begins, those are considered to be his. Those are peros, right? He gets to eat the peros. However, I will say, biyitziasa, listen to this, I will say, when they're divorced, let's say a couple gets divorced, and lemaisa again, as you're getting divorced, there's still peros on the property that she owns. So who gets those peros? So I'd say maybe he's entitled to the peros. He's only entitled to what? To what he took over the course of the marriage. But whatever is still mechubra at the time of the dissolution of the marriage is not his. So even though he gets them during marriage, at the dissolution of the marriage, they're hers. Vatlusha menakarka, detached produce, bichnisasa shala, at the onset of the marriage, or during the marriage, they're hers. By the dissolution of the marriage, we'll say if there's detached produce, that becomes his. Says the Gemara, and the Bosei, it's actually very interesting. Says the Gemara, Pshita, Aru Ubate Aru. Now let's say, going with the first case of the Mishnah, woman inherits cash. Now there's a Shaila, what should we invest the cash in? What should we purchase? So let's say, again, I have a choice, Aru Ubati. Should I buy land? I will say now land, whenever we see land unqualified, usually means means agricultural land. So if there's a choice between buying farmland and a house, now what's the chap of a house? So I guess you could live in it, but what else? Rental income, right? You could rent it out. So if it's a choice between buying farmland and a house, ara, we buy farmland. Bati vidikli, the choice between buying a house, a home, or date palms, then bati, we buy homes, because apparently rental income is better than date palm income. Dikli v'ilani, date palms or other fruit trees, dikli, date palms are better investments. Ilani v'gufni, choice between fruit trees and grapevines, ilani, we go with fruit trees. Abba zardosa upeira dekavri. This is actually interesting. If you have a choice between a forest, abba is a forest, zardosa are sorb trees. Right? A choice between a forest of sorb trees or peira dekavri is interesting. A fish pond. Like a fish farm. A fish pond. So where do you go? Amrile peira va amrile karna. So this is actually very interesting. Take a look at Rashi here for just a moment. Rashi says over here, zardosa ilanos shall uzdurin. So we'll say now the chap over here, the common denominator between the fish pond and the forest of sorb trees is like this. The sorb trees, apparently their fruit was not very sought after. So if you had a forest of sorb trees, most probably what you would use it for would be the lumber. You use it for the wood. So now with a fish pond, also what's going to happen over time? You will deplete the fish supply. At some point in time, you'll deplete the fish supply. So what it says here, it's interesting over here. So some say this is treated like pre, like peiro. Some say it's treated like karen. Now look at Rashi again, just for one more moment. Rashi says over here, Amrile peiro, im nofalo b'yerusha, kitzitas ha'itzim v'dagim shebechafira hu perion, v'akarku hu karen. Now both say, now here's something very interesting. When in an asset, the assumption is that there's two parts, or there can be two parts. There's what's called the karen, the principal, and there's the pre, which is the I'm sorry, product or interest. It's the use of, meaning it says the principal part. That's the chilek is like this. The peros can be used up. The karen remains. So the Gemara says over here that in the case of the sorb forest or in the fish pond, so amr le pera va amr le karna. Some say that ultimately again, that this is considered to be peros, that both these considered to be peros. I will say, why would they both be considered peros? Since, again, lemaisa, they can both be used up. Others say, no, they're keren. That ultimately, again, you have the land of the forest, which is the keren. The trees are the pre. You have the fish of the pond, which are the pre. But the water, or the pit itself, the pond itself, which is the keren. So the chilik over here, remember, is if something, I mean, just the reason why this is important, is because if a woman inherits something that has the status of just the pre, so what do we do with it? We sell it off. We use those proceeds to purchase land. It's only if she inherits something that has a karen, right? That is a principle is the wrong word, but I'm going to use the word principle. You understand what it means? Like, for example, the paradigmatic case of karen and pre would be what? Land with trees. Land with fruit trees. That's the paradigmatic case of, so you have the land, which is the Karen, the fruit trees, which is the pre. So anytime she's inherit, and that's why the case, for example, she inherits money. So what's money? Money's a pre. So what do you do if she inherits a pre? She sells it off, gets the money, right, and invests in a Karen with a pre. Hopefully that has Karen, that's principal, and also payros. So the arguing over here, in this case over here, where you have a depletable asset, so do we view the fish pond as Karen and pre, or just pre? Do we view the sorb tree forest as Karen and pre, or just pre? So the Gemara says, Klal d'milsa, the rule is, giz o machlef peiro. We'll say if you have something, literally, that regenerates. So if you have something that you can use, yirat, giz o machlef literally means its trunk regenerates, which is another way of saying that the asset regenerates, then that's called a pre. Ain giz o machlef, if however, again, it does not regenerate, that's called Karen. Another interesting case. Let's say, so a woman has an animal, and a woman has an animal that's nichse mulug. Remember, nichse mulug is property that she brings into the marriage. It's hers in title. He has usage rights. So let's say now what happens, her mulug animal, mazel tov, has a baby. So her cow, her mulug cow, has a calf. And what happens? The mulug calf is stolen, and then they catch the thief. So what's the halacha? Mishalim tashlumi kefel liisha. So we'll say, what happens? You pay after, the thief has to pay tashlumi kefel. And what happens? She has to go, who gets that kefel? That kefel goes to the wife. Kefa goes to the wife. Now Rashi points out over here, Tashlumi Kefa Leisha, below Lebal, right, and not to the husband. The Kasaka Daitcha, the Kasavra Inav Lodos Peri, Ela Karen, Vilokach Ben Karkin. Now both say, now remember, technically speaking, if the calf is a pre, meaning if the cow is Karen and the calf is a pre, so who gets the calf?
Husband.
But the fact that we're paying the kefil to the wife indicates to us what? That the calf itself is also considered to be Karen, and therefore again she gets the kefil. So Gemara says, come on, now whose opinion does this reflect? Why? This sign, because when the Rabbi saw Vlad Behemas Melug Lebal, look what the Raisa says. The offspring of a Melug animal goes to the husband, because apparently it's considered to be like a pre. But Vlad Shifchas Melug Leisha. But you both say, if let's say a woman has a slave or a servant, right? A Melug servant, and that servant has a baby, the offspring of a Melug servant goes to the Isha. So we're going to have to discuss why this is not symmetrical. So again, so the offspring of a Melug animal is the husband, apparently it's like a pre, but the offspring of a Melug Eved belongs to the Isha. The Chananya ben Achi Yoshia Amar, and Chananya says, no, Asu Vlad Shifchas Melug, Kivlad Behimas Melug. Chananya says, not true. Chananya says that the offspring of the Vlad of a Shifchas Melug is just like the offspring of a Melug animal, and just like the offspring of a Melug animal will belong to the husband, so too the offspring of a Shifchas Melug will also belong to the husband. To which I will say, so remember, so what did Rabbi Yannai just say before? Rabbi Yannai just said before that if you steal the offspring of a Melug animal, who do you pay kefil to? You pay kefil to the wife, which is not in alignment with either of these opinions, because according to the first opinion, let me say it differently. According to both of these opinions, both will agree that what? That the offspring of a Melug animal belongs to the husband. The only point of contention between Chananya and Rabbanan is what? Is the offspring of a Melug Eved. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, Afilu Tema Divrei Hakol. It's not true. You could even say that this brisa reflects the view of everyone. Why? It is true that the offspring of the Melug animal belongs to the husband. But Peiro de Peiro lo takin le Rabbanan. Rabbo say, what doesn't he get? He doesn't get the Peiros of the Peiros. In other words, Rabbo say, what's Peiros of Peiros? That's kefil, right? So kefil be considered. So meaning, when do we see husband? Husband gets peros. So therefore, the Gemara is saying, when we said before that the wife gets the kefil, we automatically assume that if the wife gets the kefil, what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay. That she's the owner of the animal and that it's Karen. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. What we're saying is the husband owns the animal, but the wife still gets the kefil. Why? Because he's only entitled to peros. He doesn't get the peros of the peros. And the payment of kefil represents peros a peros. Therefore, that goes back to the wife. But ownership of the stolen Melug animal is, I should say differently, ownership of the offspring of the Melug animal still belongs to the husband. So Gemara says, Bishlama lechananya hainu delechashina lemisa. So we'll say, I understand Chananya's approach. So we'll say, Chananya's approach is that lemisa, husband owns the offspring of the Melug animal and the offspring of the Melug Eved. Now why is that? Because apparently in Chananya's model, we're not choshesh from Misa. We're not choshesh from Misa. We'll say that we assume that the mother Melug animal and the mother Shifcha will remain alive. Therefore, those represent the Karen of the woman, and therefore the husband gets to keep the offspring because ultimately the offspring is the pre. However, El Rabbanon Ichai Shina L'Misa, but I must remember the Rabbanon say that the offspring of the Melug animal belongs to the husband, and the offspring of the Melug Eved belongs to the Isha. Now, what's the logic there? If the Rabbanon are concerned about Misa, that they're afraid that, let's say again, the Shifcha is going to die, in which case, again, if the Shifcha dies, I must say, then what? Then the Vlad represents the Karen. If the Vlad represents the Karen, then lamaisa that belongs to the isha. So if they're choshesh for that, then afilu v'lad behemas melug namilo. So Rabbi said, then what? Then the halacha should be that even the offspring of the melug animal should also what? Should also go ahead and belong to the woman because there's a concern that maybe the mother melug animal will die. And however, v'ilo chashin lamisa, and if we're not choshesh lamisa, then afilu v'lad shifchas melug nami. Then lamaisa, even the offspring of the shifchas melug should also belong to the husband. Which one is it? To which the Gemara says, the Olam, Chai Shila Misa. In reality, you're right, we're Choshe Shemisa, meaning we are concerned that the mother, that the Shifcha is going to die, and therefore again, the offspring will become the Karen, in which case again, that's why we give the offspring of the Shifcha's Melug to the wife. So why not give the offspring of the behemas malug to the wife as well? V'shayni behema de'ika ora. Because the idea over here is that even if the mother animal does die, so the keren doesn't totally disappear with her. Why? Because there's still the hide. In other words, that even if the mother animal dies, there are still parts of the animal that remain in existence that can be used by the wife, and therefore lemaisa, again, the keren is still in existence. Because the keren will still be in existence, therefore the husband will be entitled to the offspring of the malug animal. Amra funa barchia. Amr Shmuel halacha kechananya. So also Rav Huna Bar Chiya said in Shmuel that halacha falls chananya. But remember, what does that mean? Namely, that halacha lemaisa, both the offspring of the malug animal as well as the offspring of the malug shifcha will both belong to the husband. Amr Rava, Amr Rav Nachman, afgav dem Shmuel halacha kechananya. So also it comes along, Rava. I said in the name of Nachman, that even though we just said Halacha Falas Chananya, listen to this, Mode Chananya agrees, Shenisgarsha, that if they get divorced, no Seles Damim, V'not Losan Mepnei Shevach Beisavia. So Chananya agrees that in the event of divorce, a wife has the right to buy out the husband from the offspring of the malug animal and the offspring of the shivchas malug. Why, Rabbi? So let's play this out. Meaning, let's say again they're married and Mazel Tov, the malug animal has a calf and the shivcha has a baby. So now we've established that both of those are property of the husband. Now what happens? They're getting divorced. So Rav Nachman saying she has the right to force a buyout of the husband. So let's say the animal is worth $500. The vlad shivcha is worth $500. She has the right to give the husband $1,000. Give me these items. Why? Because they represent Shevach Beis Aviyah. Because they represent property or inheritance from her father's home. They have certain sentimental value to her that they do not possess for the husband. Therefore, the ma'aseh, she has the right to force a buyout. So even if he says, I don't want to sell it to you, she has the right to give him the money and he would have to give her back the assets.
That's only because she had it before. Right?
That is correct. That's because it existed during the marriage. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, hechnisa lo eiz lechava v'racha legizasa v'tarnagolis lebeitzasa v'dekala peirosav. So let's listen to this. If she brought into the marriage a goat, right? And the job of the goat, or the purpose of the goat, was to provide them with milk. Or she brought in a rachel, a lamb, for wool. Or a rooster, chicken, for eggs. Or a date palm for dates. So what's the halacha? Ocha v'holich achetich la'keren. Husband has the right of unrestricted usage of these items. So he could go ahead and continue to enjoy the peiros, even if what? Even if it totally depletes it. Meaning, technically speaking, so she can't say, hey, you're using too much of the item, you're depleting it. His ability or his rights in the peiros are simply unlimited. Amra Nachman, Ayla leglima peira havi. If she brings a cloak into the marriage, that cloak is considered to be a pri, or the cloak is the keren, but the usage of the cloak is considered to be a pri, and therefore michsi be va'azil adekalyo, and ultimately he has the right to wear it, literally until it falls apart. Kimman, whose opinion is this? Like kiatano tisanya hamelech va'chol harizeperos, because as if she brings into the marriage melech a salt pit. Or chol is like a sand pit, right, where you would go ahead and you would dig up earth for building purposes. So what's the halacha? The halacha is hari ze peros. So ultimately, again, these are considered to be peros. In other words, that he can continue to use the salt and he can continue to use the sand as much as he wants. Pir shel gafris, if she brings in a sulfur pit, or machporis shel tzrif, or an alamine, in these cases, Rabbi Meir Omer Karen, v'chom Omer Peros. Rabbi Meir says, ultimately, it has a status of Karen, and therefore Rashi says, v'yimkar v'yilakach d'abdam of karka l'fisha per of kala. See, in these cases, since the item, whether it's the alum or whether it's the sulfur, will ultimately be depleted, so therefore, again, the first opinion says that it has a, Rabbi Meir says it's like Karen, therefore you should sell it off and use the money to buy property. On the other hand, Chacham say, no, it has the status of peros, and therefore, again, he has the ability to go ahead and use it. Reb Shimon Omer, Makom Shiaf HaKocho. So, also remember, Reb Shimon was the one who said, wherever his rights are stronger at the onset of marriage, they're weaker at the dissolution of the marriage, but wherever her rights are stronger at the beginning of marriage, or wherever her rights are weaker at the beginning of marriage, they're stronger at the end of marriage. And the Mishnah gave the example. Reb Shimon Hainu Tanakama. But Reb Shimon and Tanakama are saying the same thing. Amarava michubarn b'shasi tzi'ikim enayhu. Or the fundamental distinction between them is the case of where there is produce attached to the ground at the dissolution of the marriage. So Rashi points out over here that the Rabban and the Tanakama don't make any mention to this, about this. Rashi says, michubarn b'shasi tzi'o, de'la ayru b'hu Rabban. The Rabban didn't make mention to this. De'les luha da'am rab shem b'yitzi'aso shalo, de'kasavri mashagadol b'shuso shalo, v'talush b'shasi tzi'o, lekha, we're supposed to listen to this. So the Gemara wants to suggest that the machlokes of Shimon and Tanakama is about property that is attached to the ground at the time of dissolution of the marriage. According to one opinion, any pedos that grew on the property at the time of the marriage are his. And therefore, Lemaisa, again, at the time of the dissolution of the marriage, he has the right to cut down any property that has already grown and take it as his own. The other opinion says, no. He only has the rights to what? To property that he took. But property that he did not take at the time of the dissolution of the marriage is still on the trees. Lemaisa, that's not him. So that's the point of contention between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanim. Says the Mishnah, Naflava the Mushvacho Zakenim. That's another interesting case. Let's say, this is during the marriage. She inherits, servants that are old. Now, both because they're old, so therefore, what? There's a fear that they're gonna die, and it's two possibilities. A, they're gonna die, and B, they're not as productive. So, what do you do with them? So, the Gemara says, "Yimachru v'yilakach ben karka, sell them, and use the proceeds to purchase real estate for who ochal peros land, and he eats the peros of the land." Rav Shimon Gamliel says, "Lo simkar." No, she doesn't have to sell it. Why? Because let's remember again, she has a sentimental attachment to these items. Why? Or to these people in this case, because they are assets from her father's home. So she doesn't have to sell them. That's from Shimon Gamliel's approach. Let's say she inherited old olive trees or old vines. So again, she should sell them, and she should use the proceeds to go ahead and purchase land, and he gets the fruit, the peros of the land. Rabbi Huda says, no. Lo simkar mipnei shein shevach beis avia. Rabbi Huda says, no, she doesn't have to sell them. Why? Because Rabbi Huda, again, literally they are the shevach, they are the praise of her father's home, meaning that they have sentimental value to her, and she need not sell them. Amarav kahano, amarav, machlokes shenaflu besadeh shela. So we'll say, when does this machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Tanakama come up? Now, what he's referring to over here, for example, she inherits old olive trees or old vines. So Tanakama says, sell them and use the proceeds to purchase land. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, she doesn't have to sell them. Why? Because she has a sentimental attachment to them.
The trees are attached to the ground.
Oh, so listen to this. So the Gemara says, so when do they have this machlokes? It's only when the field is hers also. So if the property upon which the vines or the trees are situated are hers, that's the machlokes comes up. However, again, you could have a situation where her father, had ownership of the trees, but didn't own the karka. The field belongs to someone else. But let's say he leases out the land to be able for someone else to plant stuff on it. So in that case, she's only inheriting trees or vines, but not inheriting land. Then everyone agrees, divrei hakol timkar. And I will say, everyone agrees that what? Sell off the trees, sell off the vines. Because you also remember, at least in the case where she owns the land as well, she still has an asset. So even if something happens to the trees or to the vine, the asset is still there. But if the only asset she has is the actual trees or vines, everyone, including Rav Shimon Gamliel, will agree that what? Sell it off and use the proceeds to go ahead and purchase land. Mishum dekakalya karna. Because the karen ultimately is in danger of becoming extinct. Maskif la Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises a kasha. Hare avadim ushvachos techisada shena shel adami. But Rav Yosef, take the case of the old avadim, the old servants, which is like a case of the olive tree without owning the field. Because Rav Yosef, remember again, in the case of the servants, all you have is the servants. There's nothing else. If they die, there's nothing else to own. And yet we see that Rav Shimon Gamliel still says that what? So also I would have thought, based on what we just said, that in the case of old Avadim, Rav Shimon Gamliel would say, sell them off and go ahead and purchase land with it. But yet he still argues in that case. Rather, if you're going to say something, here's what you have to say. Amrav kana amrav, machlokes besada she'ina shala. Rav also say the machlokes, you know, Shimon Gamliel and the Chacham is only in the case where she doesn't own the field. But if she does own the field, divrei hakol lo simkar. Ah, oh, now you just totally turned this around. When is there the machlokes, you know, of Kahana, or of Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakamo? That's only when she doesn't own the field. So Shimon Gamliel says there's a danger that she's going to lose everything when these vines die, or when the olive tree dies. Therefore, the Maisa sell it off now and purchase property. So however, that's the Chachamim. Rav Shimon Gamliel still says, no, Shevach Mizavio, she has sentimental attachment, she doesn't have to sell it. However, everyone agrees that what? Besad Shalof, the field is hers. Divrei HaKol, lo Simkar, that there is no need to sell it off. Why? Mipnei shevach beisavia. Because Rabbos say, again, literally the praise of our father's home, i.e. because even if the olive trees die, or even if lemaisa the vines die, nevertheless what? Right? There's still land, and because there's still land, she could do something else with that land. Therefore, he cannot compel her to sell. All right, Rabbos, we'll stop over here. Let me ask Hashem, pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow morning.